and to this city, our Swami Tattvamayanandaji. And especially that he should give a class here on the Isavasya Upanishad, the very first word of which, the very first verse or stanza of which gives the essence of Vedanta. And he is, I would say, unspeakably eminently qualified, amazingly eminently qualified to teach Vedanta, to teach the scriptures, to teach the commentaries on these scriptures, having studied them essentially for his whole life. So we look forward to an extremely inspiring and enlightening experience in listening to the Upanishads and other scriptures over the years, as will be expounded by the Swami.
प्रविश्यवाच मिमां प्रसुत्तां संजीवयेदि अखिलशक्तिधरस्वधाम्ना अन्यांश्च हस्तचरणश्रवणत्वगादीन् प्राणान् नमो भगवदे पुरुषाय तुभ्यं ओं नमः शङ्खचक्राभयाभीष्टहस्ते नमस्तेऽम्बिके गौरीपद्मासनस्थे नमः स्वर्णवर्णे प्रसन्ने जगद्देवि महागवेके नमस्ते या देवी स्तुयेदे नित्यमेभुधे वेदपारगैः स्वामी वसतु जिह्वाग्रे ब्रह्मरूपां सरस्वती. I shall start with chanting the Shantipatha, the peace chant of this special Upanishad. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyade Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. The invisible is the infinite. The visible too is the infinite. From the infinite, the visible universe of infinite extension has come out. The infinite remains the same, even though the infinite universe has come out of it. Om, peace, peace, peace. At the outset, I would like to tell you something about this Upanishad and its place in the extensive Vedic literature. Some of what I'm going to tell you may be already familiar to you. In that case, it's be some kind of a revision. As most of you know, the Vedas constitute the most important scripture of Hindu philosophy, Hindu culture, and Hindu spiritual heritage. In Hindu tradition, the entire religious scripture, the world of religious scriptures, is divided into three categories. Of the three categories, the most important, the foundational scripture, is called the Vedas, or Shrutis we call. So you find in Hindu tradition, if you want to judge whether a tradition, a philosophical idea, or a convention is authentic or not, you have to decide on the basis of its relation to the Vedas. If it is sanctioned in the Vedas, it is authentic. So also Gita, Mahabharata, Ramayana, or any of the rituals like pujas, or any philosophical doctrine, anything, if it agrees with the Vedas, it is correct, it is acceptable, it is authentic. And if it contradicts the Vedas, it is not authentic. Now, this Vedas, as another very well-known technical term, it is called Shruti. Shruti means the Vedas. The next in importance is Smriti. Smriti is, in fact, a kind of a constitution. How the ideas contained in Vedas are practiced or to be practiced in different ages is explained in this Smriti. The third is Puranas. In this context, you may perhaps remember, Swami Vivekananda made a very, very, very important, well-known statement. All the problems which go in the name of religion, social injustices, all kinds of degenerations that you find in religious practices, is because we move away from the fundamental principles of a particular religious faith system. So in the context of India, all the problems that perhaps India had to suffer, you find Swamiji has outlined this in this Colombo to Elmore lectures, or because we deviated from the teaching, central teachings of the Vedas, and we moved closer and closer to the Puranas and Smritis. From the absolute foundational scriptures, we move to the relative or apparently insignificant teachings. Now, that much about this. So, Shruti, Smriti, and Puranas, and Vedas, or codes of conduct, and mythologies. Now, these Vedas are four in number, as most of you know, Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, and Athar Veda. Of this, Rig Veda is the oldest. And many of the mantras, many of the verses found in the other three Vedas are taken from Rig Veda itself. Ishavasyopanishad is related to the second of the Vedic tradition, that is called Yajur Veda. Now, I shall say a few things about the place of Vedas in and its relation to Ishavasyopanishad. Many of you know that it was the great sage Vyasa who classified Vedic literature under four headings, four categories: Rigveda, Yajurveda, Samaveda, and Atharveda. He had four disciples. Their names were Yajurvedas, the Rigveda, Vyasa taught Yajurveda to Vaishambhayana, Samaveda to Jaimini, and Atharveda to Sumantu. Now, when Vyasa taught Yajurveda to his disciple Vaishampayana, there is a story which goes, which explains the importance and the relevance of this Upanishad. Vyasa taught Yajurveda to Vaishampayana, and Vaishampayana had a number of disciples. Of them, the most brilliant was the great Yajnavalkya. And incidentally, Yajnavalkya is the greatest and most well-known philosopher sage of the Yajurveda tradition. So, once it so happened that Vaishambhayana was forced to undertake a religious penance. And as part of this religious ceremony, he asked his disciples to practice some religious vows, meditation, puja, and so on, some rituals. When Vaishampayana requested his disciples, Yajnavalkya came forward. He was had a very high opinion of his own scholarship and efficiency, the most brilliant among the disciples of Vaishampayana. So Yajnavalkya said, why should you trouble these insignificant young men. I shall do everything. If I am here, why should you take the trouble to take these people? So Yajnavalkya had a very high opinion about his own efficiency, his own scholarship. In a way, he had some of these qualities which justified his high opinion about his own marriage. But Vaishampayana thought the man was overstepping his limits. And he said, look here, you have insulted all your brother disciples. Now you should leave this hermitage. And not only that, whatever you have learned from me, you should never use it. The Vedic, you know, in the mythological language, Vaishampayana asked him to vomit whatever he has learned from him, which technically means you should leave behind whatever I have taught you. Whatever I have taught you, you should never use in future. So Yajnavalkya was very much upset, and he took a vow, well, I shall never use whatever you have taught me, and he left the hermitage. But Yajnavalkya was made of sterner stuff. Though his guru rejected him, his strong faith in God did not leave him. So he straightaway went to a forest, built a small hermitage, and did penance to propitiate Surya Deva, the sun god, who is an authority, who is one of the deities mentioned in the Vedic literature. And after long years of penance, the sun god, appeared before him, and the mythology tells us in the form of a horse, and taught him a new set of Yajurveda, which came to be known as Shukla Yajurveda. The other Yajurveda which Vaishampayana taught Yajnavalkya earlier, and which Yajnavalkya was forced to reject, came to be known as Krishna Yajurveda. This is the tradition of the Yajurveda. So the two important Upanishads, Katho Upanishad and Taittiriya Upanishad, belong to Krishna Yajurveda. And this Isavasya Upanishad and Brihadaranyaka Upanishad belong to Shukla Yajurveda. In Sanskrit, Krishna means not well arranged or dark, and Shukla means white or properly arranged. So, and this Yajnavalkya, who was rejected by his guru because of his impertinence, and who was blessed by the sun god, came to be known as the most prominent philosopher in the Vedic literature. This Isavasya Upanishad belongs to the Shukla Yajurveda tradition. The other one is Brihadaranyaka Upanishads. Now, this Upanishad, as Vedanta ji has already stated, it's called Isavasya Upanishad. The name Isha comes from the first mantra, Isavasyam idam sarvam yat kincha jagatyam jagat Tena tyaktena munjidhaha ma gridhakasya svidhanam. This is the first mantra. And the name Isavasya Upanishad or Isham derives its name from the first mantra itself. And its importance is that it reconciles both the highest idealism and the highest realism in a single mantra. That is its uniqueness. If I explain, I give a rough meaning of the first mantra, you will understand the significance of this. See, Ishavasyam idam sarvam means idam sarvam jagat Ishavasyam. It's in Sanskrit, in English it means the entire world is pervaded by the divine spirit. So God is not an entity that we seek outside the empirical world. Everything in this world is an expression of the divine spirit. That's what is meant by this world is pervaded by the divine spirit, Isha. I shall explain one mantra after another, but to give an idea of the significance of this Upanishad, I have to explain, I give a rough main explanation of the first mantra. The second part of the mantra, tena tyaktena bunjithaha ma krudhakasya siddhanam. The second part of mantra says, because the entire creation is pervaded by the Almighty Spirit, and because God is not an extraterrestrial entity, God is very much a part of this world. Everything in this world is divine. So you don't have to seek a God who has created this world and who has placed man in this world and who is sitting somewhere outside and as a supervisor who controls this universe. On the other hand, God is very much a part of the creation. Creator and creation are the same. Now, what is its relevance to man living in this world? If everything is God, we can say, then in what way does it affect the practical life of a man living in this world? Second mantra says, tena tyaktena bunchidaha ma krudhakasyasiddhanam. It has got a great message to anybody living in modern world. He's a philosopher, an engineer, or a doctor, a man walking in the street. It says, therefore you enjoy this world. You don't run away from this world. You don't have to run away from the world because there is nowhere to, you cannot run away to anywhere because the whole world is pervaded by the Divine Spirit. But then, instead of enjoying this world as a slave, you enjoy the world as a master. That is the technique revealed in the first mantra. Therefore, enjoy through renunciation. Apparently, there is a contradiction between enjoyment and renunciation. Enjoyment, normally when we use the word enjoyment, bhoga, tena tektena bunji thaha. Therefore, you enjoy. That's the meaning of it. How? Tyaktena means tyagena. That is the commentary of Sri Shankaracharya. I shall say something about Shankara's commentary later. Therefore, live in this world. And the second mantra says, try to live for 100 years. Kurvanneva iha karmani jijivisheshatam samah. That second mantra says, try to live for 100 years with perfect health, happiness, enjoyment, but enjoy, not through enjoyment, enjoy through renunciation. If you can live in this world with the full conviction that this world is pervaded by the Divine Spirit, this world belongs to God, this world doesn't belong to us, then we can live in this world, enjoy the world, and enjoy like a master, not as a slave. So, if we can live in this world with detachment, we can have the best of both. We can have the best of the highest idealism and also the highest realism. So perhaps this mantra is the best reply to those who criticize Upanishad philosophy as otherworldly, as a world-negating philosophy of life. But that's a strong criticism put forward by many modern interpreters and thinkers, and many modern agnostics who try to portray Upanishad philosophy as a flight from the realities of the world. Rather, Upanishad teaches to plunge into the realities of the world as an intelligent man. If you can live in this world with the full conviction that this world belongs to God, the world is not a separate entity, that the world is pervaded by the Divine Spirit, then we can live in this world, as Upanishad says, shatayurvai purushaka. See, a man's age, longevity is supposed to be 100 years. That was the old Vedic dictum. Everyone should try to strive to live for 100 years. And second mantra says, kurvanneva iha karmani jijivishet shatam sama. So work in this, work, live in this world, work, enjoy this world, but while enjoying, keep in mind that this world doesn't belong to you, it belongs to God. Then we can enjoy, not through enjoyment, we can enjoy through renunciation. So tyaga and bhoga means enjoyment and an ideal of renunciation can be synthesized, then it constitutes a healthy philosophy of life. In fact, this is the central message of the first two mantras of this Upanishad. I will come to the first mantra, then the second mantra. First mantra I shall take up. If you have got the text, it be useful. If you do not have the text, I shall explain in English. Isha vasyam idam sarvam yat kincha jagatyam jagat tena tyaktena bunjithaha ma gritha kasya svidhanam. This is the splitting of this mantra. Now, you know, Isha Vasya Upanishad is supposed to be a metrical Upanishad. There are two types of Upanishads in the Upanishad tradition. One set of Upanishads, like Isha Vasya Upanishad, Katha Upanishad, they are supposed to be metrical Upanishads, which follow certain metrical rules, which are in the form of verses, not prose. Then there are certain other Upanishads, like Brihadaranyaka, Taittiriya, etc. They are called prose Upanishads. Gadya Upanishad is Sanskrit we call. They are not in metrical form. They are in the form of prose. Upanishads which are available in verse form are supposed to be relatively modern. That means it may belong to around 2000 BC. And the Upanishads, which are in prose form, are supposed to be more antique, more ancient, maybe around 5000 BC, around that. This is the an estimate of modern linguists and philologists. So, the first mantra tells us, Jagatyam yet kincha. In this world, Jagatyam yet kincha asti. Mean jagat itself means something which moves. Jagatya means in this world. Yatkinja means whatever you find. So whatever you find in this world which is moving, means whatever is perceptible to our eyes, our ears, or our skin, or our smell, whatever is perceptible to our senses, whatever you find in this world, that is, what is it explained? Upanishad tells, Jagat, there is Isha Vasyam. The literal meaning of this word is, this expression is, Isha Achadaniyam. Bhashyakara Shankaracharya says in Sanskrit, in English it means, pervaded by the divine spirit. It is pervaded by the divine spirit. So God is not a person who creates this world, and creates different beings in this world, and sits somewhere outside the world, controlling, regulating, punishing and rewarding. Rather, God is the divine spirit, which is the essence of everything that we can pursue, we can think about, we can conceive of. So there is no distinction between the empirical and non-empirical, the phenomenal and the noumenal. Both are the same. As I already explained, therefore, even when we try to live in this world with attachment, with desire, thinking that this world, its pleasures, all belong to us, even then, in reality, they belong to God. So, some of the commentators have explained this in a very graphic style. Even if you think that you are behind everything, you can create this world, that God has no role to play in our destiny, even then it is God's will that works. If we can accept that it's God's will that is behind everything, then we can live without worry and anxiety. Even if we don't accept God's will, it is God's will alone that works, But the only advantage is we can have plenty of worries, problems, troubles, anxieties and all. So anxiety, neurosis, depression, all these problems. So that's why Upanishad tells there's an intelligent way of living in this world. So tena tyaktena. What is the intelligent way? The Upanishad tells, live in this world, but keep in mind the supreme truth that world is pervaded by the divine spirit. If we can keep that idea in mind, then we can work without anxiety. And if our work doesn't produce the expected result, we will not be depressed. So anxiety, neurosis at the time of doing work, and depression if we don't get the expected results, can be avoided if we can keep in mind the world is pervaded by the divine spirit. So in a way, this two slokas, first and second verse, they constitute the essence of the philosophy of Karma Yoga, which is graphically explained in the Bhagavad Gita, in the third chapter, and also in other chapters as well. In fact, these two Upanishads were very dear to Mahatma Gandhi. In fact, these two slokas together guided Gandhiji's life. So, then the last part of the mantra says, Ma Gridhakasyu Siddhana. If we can keep in mind, if everything in this world is pervaded by the divine spirit, then we won't strive to procure something which belongs to another man. We'll be free from greed and we'll be free from desires. Because everything belongs to God, then there is no need to strive to acquire something which doesn't really belong to us. So, ma kṛtakasyasi dhanam. Therefore, dhanam ma kṛtha. That's the literal meaning is, don't have any greed for anything which doesn't belong to us. So, this mantra reconciles the highest idealism, that is, Ishavasyam. Everything in this world is pervaded by the supreme reality. Reality is one, that is impersonal, that is called some Brahman, Atman, etc. At the same time, it is not an abstract philosophical idealism. It has got a practical dimension. The practical dimension is everything is pervaded by the divine spirit. Therefore, we can live in this world, enjoy this world, work in this world without being a slave, without being enslaved by the work we do or the results that we aspire, the results behind our actions. So, if we can combine action with detachment, it becomes a healthy philosophy of life. We can avoid anxiety at the time of doing work, and we'll be free from depression if we don't get the expected result. This practical aspect of Advaita philosophy is brought out in this third and fourth part of the Padas, means of this mantra, quarters of this mantra. The second mantra is also very important. After explaining a few mantras, I shall go to Shankaracharya's commentary on a later occasion. Shankaracharya, in his commentary, has very systematically analyzed the true dimension, the true implication of this action without desire, action without attachment, and its relation to the highest spiritual idealism. In fact, this also constitutes the synthesis of Jnana Yoga and Karma Yoga. The second mantra has got an equally important implication to a common man living in this modern age of science, technology, industrial culture, and so on. Kurvanneva iha karmani jiji visheshatam. Iha means in this world. So, you live in this world, but Upanishad tells karmani kurvanneva means active every minute. Now, the highest idealism of Advaita doesn't ask you to run away from the world. In fact, Advaita teaches you to face the world more intelligently. That is the greatness of Advaita. Shankaracharya, in his commentary, has brought out this idea in a very graphic, unforgettable style. Advaita doesn't ask you to run away from the world. Advaita doesn't ask you to fear this world. Advaita, it is the highest monistic philosophy, trains your mind to face the realities of this world with supreme tranquility, with a spiritual intelligence, which saves many of the problems related to action. So the Upanishad says, Iha, in this world, karmani kurvanneva, shatam samaha jiji vishe. This is the prose order. I shall explain it. It will be very simple. Live in this world, but be active every minute, and strive to live for 100 years. So it's very clear. The Upanishad, which expounds the highest monistic philosophy, the highest philosophy of Advaita, asks you to live in this world, be active, and doesn't ask you to run away from your home and go to a forest and spend the rest of your lifetime in meditating or in contemplation. Doesn't ask you. But at the same time, to reach this level of consciousness, to understand the implication of the teaching, the entire world is pervaded by the divine spirit, we have to do a little bit of introspection and contemplation. That is necessary. So a degree of contemplation and introspection is necessary within, and that will convince us that the entire world is pervaded by the divine spirit. So God and world are not two distinct entities. They are part of the same. We become aware of the presence of God when we become convinced of the ideal of renunciation. If everything belongs to God, nothing belongs to me. But I have to live in this world. I can't run away from this world. But therefore, let me live in this world, be active all the time, but keep in mind at a subconscious level that everything belongs to God. And this is the essence of karma yoga, which later Lord Krishna, maybe several millennia later, Lord Krishna expounds the Bhagavad Gita in the third chapter and other chapters as well. So here he says, Iha, in this world, karmani kurvanneva shatam samaha jijivishe. This is the prose order. Live in this world, be active, and for 100 years. This idea comes from the Ayurvedic text. No? Ayurvedic text, the ideal of life is supposed to be 100 years. Shatayur vai purusha. Somebody, every man has got 100 years. That's the old ideal. That is incorporated here. And the third and fourth part of the sloka, evam tohi na anyate dosti na karma lippede nare. That is very important. I shall explain this later. First I shall give the practical implication of this sloka, and then I shall come back to sloka again if necessary. If we can live in this world with the full conviction that the world is not distinct from God, with the full conviction that the world that we live in, the world of which we are a part, the world in which we experience in our everyday life, is pervaded by the divine spirit, then the divine spirit is not a separate entity. Then whatever we do will not affect us. Normally, man tries to run away from action because action has its problems. If one can have the results of action without doing anything, he will be happy. But that is not possible. So normally, there is a tendency for a man, for many people, to avoid an action which is unpleasant, and to aspire to an action which is pleasant. If an action brings unpleasant results, then even if it's our duty, we try to run away from that action. We try to avoid that action. And if an action produces pleasant results all the time, then we have a tendency to repeat that action even when it is not necessary. Attachment to action is the cause of both these tendencies. Isavasya Upanishad tells us that if we can work in this world with the full conviction that world is an expression of the Divine Spirit, the world is not distinct from God, the world is pervaded by the Divine, then we can work without attachment. We can work as masters, as Swami Vivekananda says in his Karma Yoga lectures. We can work as masters and not as slaves. Upanishad tells us that we can avoid action. If you don't try to work as masters, you will have to work. You have to work as slaves, that's all. So better try to work as masters. Gita is a prakritistvam yogshasi. Gita, in the Gita, Lord Krishna tells Arjuna, if you try to run away from the field of your swadharma, your rightful duty, still you have to work, because man cannot keep quiet. Even if he tries to keep quiet physically, his mind will not remain quiet. Even if he lay down in an easy chair, without doing anything with our hands or legs, still our mind will be busy all the time. So one can never avoid action. If we try to run away from action, we will be forced to work as slaves, helpless slaves. Swamiji in these Karma Yoga lectures takes this idea and says, is human life like a helpless boat that is tossed above the mighty waves of an ocean? Or is it a ship which has got a captain behind who controls its course? Now, Upanishad tells us that we can never avoid action. Even if we try to physically avoid action, our mind will be busy all the time. Which means action is the nature of human existence. But action produces its problems. Most of the problems which are termed as the problems of abundance, problems associated with this age of science and technology, hypertension, BP, high diabetics, schizophrenia, anxiety neurosis, depression, procrastination, most of the problems that you associated with a mental institution, all these are related to action. Now, Upanishad tells us we can avoid all these problems and still be active all the time. There is only one important thing required. We have to change our attitude behind action. So, the Upanishad explains the first mantra, act, but remember, Ishavasyam idam sarvam jagat. This world, act, work, strive to achieve whatever you want. But remember, keep in mind that the world in which you are living, which you are experiencing, of which you are a part, is pervaded by the Divine Spirit. It is not something distinct and different from God. It is God itself, which God's presence is pervading the entire creation, entire existence. With that attitude, if we can work, we can work without attachment and with perfect detachment. And if we work like that, the Upanishad tells, Toyi karma na lipyate, then karmas won't affect you. When while doing work, you will be detached. It doesn't mean that you will work with an attitude of indifference. Gita explains this. In fact, this question is answered by Gita in one of the most memorable verses found in the Gita book. Gita answers this question. What is the mechanism, the psychology of action without desire? Saktaha karmani avidvamso yatha kurvandi bharata kuriyan vidvan tatha asaktaha sigishuhu lokasangram. I should explain in English. Two types of people are mentioned here. Saktaha means those who are engrossed in their desire, those who are always active, but full of desire, full of attachment, out of greed, they work. They are ignorant people. So while doing work, they will be suffering from anxiety neurosis. If the work doesn't produce the expected result, will depression, a lunatic asylum sometimes, mental institutions. So, and other related problems. This is what happens to a man who is a workaholic, who works with attachment and with desire. Now, on the other side, there is another person. Gita calls him Vidwan, man of knowledge, wise man, man of wisdom. He is also equally active, maybe more active. See, men like Shankaracharya, Swami Vivekananda, Mahatmaji, they have done much, much more work than anybody. In fact, we are still bearing the fruits of the action they have done. Just imagine the amount of work this Shankaracharya did. Shankaracharya wrote all these bhashyas before he started going to, before he reached the 16th year. He had finished writing all the complicated philosophical works, the mightiest, the most profound philosophical works available in Sanskrit literature. He had completed all this before he reached 16th year. And Swami Vivekananda lived only for 39 years. Jesus lived for 30 years. So, and Gandhiji also was a supreme example of the psychology of action, this philosophy of action without desire. So, this third and fourth mantra, part of this mantra, the third and fourth lines of the second mantra, evam tvai nya anyathedosti na karma dipyate nare. In fact, Gandhiji liked this part of the Upanishad very much. And once, you know, maybe C.F. Andrews, is a British admirer of Gandhiji who always moved with him, he put a question to Gandhiji. He found Gandhiji was sleeping only for nearly 4 hours a day. And this old man was always active. His actions with British people, rulers didn't like his action. But they had a great deep regard for him, nevertheless. So C.F. Andrews put a question to Gandhiji. Gandhiji, why don't you take rest for some time? You are fatigued, you are tired. In one context, maybe C.F. Andrews, I'm not very sure, put this question. Then Gandhiji asked the question, who is tired? Because he found Gandhiji never took holidays, never went on a vacation, was always active. And then he asked a counter question, who is tired? And later, when some journalist asked Gandhiji to explain this counter question, he said, I work not thinking that I am a body-mind complex. I think I work as an instrument in the hands of God. That's what Gandhiji said in reply. And later this was published in the Young India. Gandhiji's complete works of Gandhi you find here. Now, how is it possible for some outstanding spiritual personalities to work so hard for so many years, so many decades, without physically, of course, they may get tired and fatigued, but mentally they remain alert all the time because they are able to perform their duties and their responsibilities with the perfect conviction that they are something beyond this physical body, something beyond the empirical. There is a divine spirit expressing, manifesting within them. And the world in which they live also is an expression of the divine spirit. They fully understand, consciously or unconsciously, the truth behind the first part of this Upanishad, Ishavasyam Idam Sarva. That is the implication of the first mantra. I shall come back to these mantras again next class. This time I was just trying to give an introduction to some of the ideas. The Upanishad contains not only the supreme ideal of Karma Yoga, the synthesis of karma and jnana, it also contains the highest Upanishadic Advaitic ideal, which we'll deal with later. Thank you. Namaskar. ओम शांति 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 ही कायेन वाचा मनसेन्द्रिय वा बुद्ध्यात्मना वा अनुसुदस्वभावात् करोमि यद्यत् सकलं परस्मै श्रीरामकृष्णाय समर्पयामि।